Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Good day. You are listening to America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. I am Carrie Weber, executive editor at America.
I am Tim Reedy, sitting in for Father Matt Malone, and each week we offer news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered by the team here at America Media.
And this week we have with us one of our team members, associate editor Olga Segura.
Hey guys.
We're very glad to have you today.
Glad to be joining you guys.
I'm glad you're glad. And we will have Carrie Robinson with us. She is the former executive director of the National Church Leadership Roundtable. I think it just goes by the Leadership Roundtable now. I think they've cut it back. And they work with parishes and church groups to improve church management. She was also at the Big Convocation of Catholic Leaders in Orlando speaking about women in leadership. And she's also the author of a book called Imagining Abundance, Fundraising, Philanthropy, and a Spiritual Call to Service. And she's a columnist at Chicago Catholic. So she has a lot of talents, and she will share many of them with us. Carrie Robinson, welcome to the show.
It's wonderful to be here.
We're so glad to have you. Your most recent piece for us was about hospitality, and it was really a very moving piece that involved both ideas about the radical hospitality that's called for by the church, but also about your own family's experience with hospitality. It's called Why Catholics Are Called to Radical Hospitality in These Political Times. It's by Carrie Robinson, and it's at americamagazine.org. So can you give us a little bit of a summary of this piece?
Sure. First of all, it's so great to be in your company. I am a huge admirer of your work at America, and it was a privilege to be invited to write this piece. Really, it stems from the unease that I think every person living in America has felt leading up to, during, and since the presidential election of 2018.
2016.
Wishful thinking. And, you know, I'm struck by the heightened anxiety, especially among vulnerable members of our communities across the United States. And it has caused me to think about who are the people and what are the communities that can help affect healing and reconciliation, who can really foster dialogue, and who can provide some kind of solace to those members of our country who are experiencing so much added gratuitous anxiety in these times. And I thought about the church and how much I hope the church can play a meaningful role in this regard. And then I realized that we are as divided as most Americans, even within our own faith family. You all spoke earlier very eloquently about transcending partisan politics, and that's really what we're called to do as people of faith. So I wrote this piece kind of in that spirit, remembering my own upbringing that was so grounded in the gospel, in Catholicism, and in this concomitant culture of welcome and hospitality.
Can you describe a little bit of what that looked like for your family?
It was, I think when you are a child, you only know what you are experiencing, and you tend to think that that is universally experienced. So it's only retrospectively that I realized how truly wonderful and unique this upbringing was. On any given day at my grandparents' house, there were people from other countries. There were many different colors, many different accents, and many different perspectives. And this was, there was a kind of a premium placed on diversity. And it added to the culture of conviviality and intellectual curiosity and music and just joy. And I thought that this was really the ideal. And I long for those days, there was a very clear sense that the tone was set by my grandparents and that they were connecting this out of their lived expression of Catholicism.
Now that it makes so much sense, that sense of hospitality. And now you yourself are probably the recipient of hospitality as you move around the world as the global ambassador for the Leadership Roundtable. Can you tell us a little bit about your travels for the organization and what you do in that role and what the Leadership Roundtable is about?
Sure. Leadership Roundtable is now in its 13th year of service to the Catholic Church. It was founded on the heels of the sexual abuse crisis in the United States. Although we don't attend to sexual abuse, it is a network of senior level leaders, ordained religious and lay, all of whom have very pronounced leadership and managerial and financial expertise. And we harness this collective expertise to strengthen the management of the Catholic Church. So we prevail upon financial acumen, managerial experience, entrepreneurial problem-solving capability, and we help church leaders solve complex temporary challenges. This has been a great success in the United States against all expectations and odds. We really want it to prove over time that we are who we say we are, and earning the trust and respect of bishops and provincials and executive directors of Catholic nonprofits has been a great blessing to us. Now we realize that the global church can also benefit from what we have brought to bear for the church in the United States. And although this year is just one of exploration, I have been commissioned by my board to visit the church all over the globe. And that has been remarkable. It's been wonderful.
That sounds amazing.
To be received by different cultures. It's wonderful to see how universal the Catholic Church is, how at home I feel at Mass, no matter where I am. And how really similar the challenges facing the church are all over the globe.
Oh, that's interesting. And so what would some of those challenges that are kind of universal look like?
I think the biggest challenge is that people who discern a vocation to religious life or to the priesthood are rarely, if ever, given the opportunity for formal training in management, communications, finance, human resource development, but very quickly they find themselves in a position of leadership and responsibility, and they often have to oversee congregations or multiple parishes or schools, complex entities, and they don't have the recourse in terms of the management side of that to exercise without some anxiety and trepidation. So we help with that. And I think there's also a strong yearning to engage laity more deeply in the life of the church and to foster healthy collaboration between religious, ordained, and lay.
Well, it particularly makes sense if it's lay people that also have those skills that might be lacking in the clergy to coordinate.
Right.
Right. And the clergy, as we've talked about, I think, before, this is not why they felt like they were called to ministry, is to, you know, manage an institutional plant or, you know, have to replace the boiler every year or, you know, run the financials, although those are important and you should know how to do those things. But being able to pull in laity to help, I imagine, is very freeing and probably is welcomed by many people, many priests.
Yes. And while that is never the motivation for discerning a vocation, mm-hmm. you can't abdicate your responsibility.
Absolutely, yeah.
So especially in the United States, but again, all over the world, as there are an increase in numbers of Catholics and a growing unhealthy percentage between priest per parishioner or per Catholic, priests often are given responsibility at a much, much younger age,
yes.
very early after they have been ordained. So it compounds the problem and the level of anxiety. And the greatest thing that priests and bishops have told us in this work is to thank us for the kind of practical training that we are offering, but they have described us as a ministry of hope. And I don't think it gets much better than right. that.
Yeah, as a lay, you know, at America, we're clearly a combination of lay and clergy. And it's great to see the ways we're able to collaborate. I know anecdotally, jumping from a Jesuit university to then working with priests, it completely like forced me to challenge things that I had grown up with. You know, that was the way that you talked about diversity. That was a very diverse work experience to kind of work with priests and see how they challenge my theology or my faith life and things like that. So it's wonderful to hear that that's the kind of work that you're doing too.
Yeah. The diversity piece of this matters enormously. When we were created almost, well, 12 and a half years ago, diversity was highly prized by us in the composition. We want it to identify women and men ordained religious and lay who comprised many different sectors. And we posit that when you are analyzing a challenge, for example, facing the church, the more diversity around the table, the better, because then your perspective is informed in a more comprehensive way. And when it comes time to coming up with solutions, you also benefit because there are no blind spots that you are inadvertently missing. So I think this is why it really matters who is at the tables of decision making. And the presumption always has to be one of goodness. You presume that people are there wanting to make a positive contribution to the life and vitality of the church. It's not a competition. Nobody has an ulterior motive. There has to be a kind of disposition of the benefit of the doubt.
In the global travels that you've been doing, have you found any unique challenges, any new issues or problems that you hadn't encountered here in the United States or that are unique to a particular location or that might be there now, but you might see coming our way eventually?
What I would say is that many of the challenges are very similar, and it is so clear what a global connected church we are. But the priorities are different depending on which culture or country one finds oneself in. In some cases, the need for best managerial practices is a matter of life and death for priests who are risking their lives. So we've seen this in Pakistan, in Mexico. So that takes on a kind of a different feel of urgency to it. There's also countries where corruption politically is so prevalent, and the church leaders want to be a counter to that, and they want to model it by ridding the church of corruption and introducing transparency and ethics, et cetera. So those are the differences that we see. Ideas about money are different in different regions of the world.
So in what sense?
I think there's, in the West, there's a more sophisticated understanding of how to render financial accountability and transparency, utilizing best financial practices. And there's a yearning for it. I think in general, people want to be squeaky clean. They just don't know what the contemporary practices are.
Right. Yeah, and I could see where that... Yeah, and in the church that has been challenged by issues of transparency as it relates to a lot of things, it would be nice to all be on the same page about that.
Right.
Carrie, but we want to switch gears right now to talk a bit about an event that happened this summer that Carrie Weber also was involved in, this convocation of lay leaders in that the church convened in Orlando, Florida. What was the occasion for this, and what was your role?
Well, it was a convocation of Catholic leaders, so mm-hmm. ordained religious and lay, from all over the country. Invitation only, as I understood, but 3,500 people attended, and it was to encourage vitality and missionary discipleship in a joyful spirit, in the joyful spirit of the gospel. And Carrie Weber was spectacular. I just want to mention
you are literally the most supportive person I have ever met. You're very kind to say that, but
it's all true.
This is why I think you're so good at what you do for the church and in leadership. And when you talk about women in leadership, is because you are so able to lift other people up and to encourage others to do the same. And that's, it's such a wonderful example of what our church can be. So I was very honored to be there with you. And it was a really interesting event, right? We talked a little bit about it on the show after I got back. It was the reason I think that they had the sort of invited delegates from dioceses because they made a very deliberate effort to achieve the kind of diversity that you were talking about was so important before, that you walking around, you could find Catholics of like every race, of every location, of different levels of ability, of all sorts of backgrounds, and it really nicely represented, not completely, we're never quite 100% represents everyone, but they did a really good deliberate job of trying to get a diverse range of voices here to have these conversations about where the church should be going.
Yes, and I think what was particularly striking, although wasn't immediately apparent, it was only after spending time in conversation over the 4 days, was the diversity around theological and political leanings. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was intentional, and I think it was important. And again, on the heels of the most divisive presidential election that we can remember in our lifetimes, that was very interesting.
The bishops literally said, you know, we have the quote-unquote pro-life Catholics, the quote-unquote social justice Catholics, although in church, really, it all overlaps.
Exactly.
But the way people label themselves or how they prioritize their interests. And they said people don't talk to each other enough about the way in which we address all of these issues in the church, and we're going to bring together people from all, you know, quote-unquote sides of these issues together to discuss in one place and remind everyone that we are all here to bring about the joy of the gospel, to live out the gospel, and to be examples of that gospel for others.
And my takeaway, honestly, was I kept remarking on the sense of civility and curiosity and kindness, and just basically decency that existed there over those 4 days. And this is how we should be approaching difference. Instead of being afraid of it or immediately categorizing people based on their form of piety, we should be celebrating that the Catholic Church is as diverse and big fascinating as it in fact is.
Exactly. A lot of the talks there were panel discussions in order to try to get the level of diversity in those conversations. And you were on one of those panels about women in leadership in the church, right?
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your panel addressed?
Yeah, it was a little bit difficult because over half of the delegates were women who were present, but this was a breakout session. And I would have preferred to see this theme woven more into the kind of overall fabric of discussion, which is, again, why your interventions on the panel, Carrie, were so important about women. So we had a breakout session, and they assigned us the largest room because they knew in advance that over 500 of the delegates would choose this topic and choose to attend it. But how much can you say about this broad theme in such a short period of time?
Sure.
On a panel? So I chose to approach it by talking about the importance of elevating women to positions of meaningful leadership in the church across every level, even in the Roman Curia, and insisting that women are at the tables of decision making as a matter of managerial urgency for the church. So I was not approaching it from the perspective of this is what women deserve, it is what women deserve, but I was approaching it more from a deep love of the church and a belief in the church's potential and a desire to see the church benefit from the best that we have to offer, and that includes most certainly women.
Yeah, well, there's multiple arguments for that, many reasoning for that, but one is just to, for young women growing up in the church, to see women in those positions, I think is so very important, because like, if you want the next generation of, you know, Carrie Weber and Robinson to be out there, I think you need
more of the next generation Carrie Robinsons. I'm not sure you want another generation of me.
But you need models out there, and you need people to see that these roles can be filled by women, and that there's, you know, these are questions we're engaged in now because we're planning a special issue on women in the church. But I think this is one particular important one angle on this question.
Tim, you couldn't have said it better. That it has been our thesis, essentially, over the last 10 years. A small group of women, colleagues of mine in Catholic philanthropy, have been going twice a year to Rome to meet with the prefects and presidents of the pontifical congregations and councils, so the cardinals who form the inner circle to the Pope. We've spanned three popes now in these conversations, and our sole objective is to raise up the role of women in the church. And what we say is that when a young Catholic woman, particularly from the West, looks at the landscape of her professional life, she knows that she can reach the highest echelons of leadership in any sector that she chooses to focus on. But when that same woman discerns a vocation to serve the church, which she loves, most often she is met with certain limitations that prevent her from bringing her full complement of skills and abilities to bear on that leadership role. That is inherently frustrating. And we worry that we will lose these talented, faith-filled, dynamic women. The church will lose them, and they'll run IBM or Apple.
Right, and there's been studies and surveys on this. I think we reported on one that was done about maybe 10 years ago or so about this very question, that there are many younger women who are basically just leaving the church because they can rise in leadership elsewhere, you know, and have different roles. So right. Urgent questions.
Do you feel that in the years that you've been going to the Vatican and talking with the leaders there that you have had a positive response, that you've made some progress, that somebody somewhere has budged slightly?
Well, you know, I am Catholic, so I'm a person of great hope. I have to answer yes.
We're Easter people. and you also understand how slowly the church works.
Yes, but I think, you know, the truth is we would never pretend that we are going to be the difference that happens. But every action and every intention that is born of good intention, that moves the needle, helps. And I certainly think the language that we've heard from our current Pope around women is encouraging. More and more, there are cardinals around the world who are raising up this issue. When the cardinal from Sweden was announced, and he made the point, which we have been advocating really for 10 years now, that there should be a special council to advise the Pope on matters pertaining to women. We would support and applaud that. It doesn't have to be a council of just women. It can be women and men, but to kind of emphasize and highlight what we can do that does not violate magisterial teaching, that doesn't counter canon law. It's really just a failure of will
and imagination.
And imagination, yes.
And I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about how you feel like, as a woman in leadership in the church yourself, some of the challenges that you've come up across yourself.
To be honest, I have only ever benefited from being a woman in the church. I don't think it was an accident that Jeff Boise, the founder of Leadership Roundtable, recruited me to serve as the founding executive director of Leadership Roundtable, because I deeply love the church. I'm unapologetic about it, but I'm also disarming. And I think I'm disarming in part because I am a woman. And when my toughest job was to go bishop by bishop, provincial by provincial, and essentially prevail on them not to be afraid, to trust in the sincerity and the good intention of this very novel movement. And that succeeded. What breaks my heart is what Tim referred to earlier. It is young, talented, super smart, much more capable women than I am who are finding it hard to exercise leadership. And they yearn to belong to this church, but they have sad stories to tell about not feeling particularly welcome. That is why I will continue probably to the day I die advocating for women and for young adults.
Well, I am comforted by your presence in that role. But you've also been involved, we have a few minutes left, in the Esteem program, which in some ways addresses the challenges that you're talking about. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is a collaboration between Leadership Roundtable and St. Thomas More, the Catholic Chapel and Center at Yale University. Father Bob Beloine, Jeff Boise, and I, many years ago, lamented the reality that we were observing where talented young adults, Catholics who were attending colleges, either Catholic colleges or were at a great secular university with a great Newman Center, they were having a positive experience of church while on campus, very involved, very eager, and then they graduated and they moved to another city and they found their first job and they found a kind of wasteland of parish life. So we wanted to stem that exodus and keep them in the church wherever they ended up landing after graduation. So Esteem is a year-long training program, a formation program that equips these brilliant young men and women while they're still in college to serve on a parish pastoral council, a diocesan finance council, or the board of trustees of a Catholic charity.
Yeah, and this is such a big challenge. This is something you've spoken about, you and Zach and Ashley Olga on Jesuitical, our podcast for young adult Catholics, about the challenges of trying to find a parish and faith community that suits one's life after college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's difficult because I think, especially for women, you know, there is this sense that you don't find a place. And I think that it doesn't get easier when you're in your 20s, you know? So it's very hard to not just find this community within a parish, but it's also difficult to find one that you feel is including you as a woman who is also a Catholic, you know? And just to Jesuitical, if you want to hear more about us, you can check us out at americamagazine.org. But yeah, it's definitely something that we've talked about often, and it is a struggle that doesn't get easier. But, you know, seeing, and I know we've been fangirling over Carrie, but my first encounter with women in leadership was Carrie Weber when I started at America, because I had grown up with nuns, and that was my idea of women in the church. So, you know, it is very comforting to see women like you guys doing this kind of work.
I feel a lot more pressure at the office now. I'm sorry. Well, and that's the kind of thing that you do think about as in a role in the church, in whether it's in a parish or a media ministry or whatnot, is how to help other people who might be struggling with the same things you're struggling with, particularly if you're a woman. I think it's right. Something we think about a lot, and making sure to lift each other up and support each other, because it can feel like a really lonely place sometimes.
And mentor.
But you're still welcome here, Tim, in this conversation.
But mentoring, I think, is a really important key in this, too. And we can all do that. Men and women can mentor younger men and women in the faith.
Exactly. And I think that's where it becomes particularly meaningful, when it's everybody helping everybody, no matter what. And that's what the church is here for.
Amen.
Well, thank you very much, Carrie Robinson, for joining us today. You can learn more about the Leadership Roundtable at leadershiproundtable.org. You can learn more about our work at America Magazine at americamagazine.org. And you can subscribe to the magazine by calling 1-800-627-9533. And you can learn more about us by listening in next week as well. So stay tuned, and thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.